Mr. and Mrs. Gruss requested that we invite their rabbis to be present, and they are here. But one of their rabbis, their Rebbe, as he is ours, was here already. And for us it is, as it is for them, a great honor for me to ask Morenu v'Rabbeinu, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, to speak a few words.
We all know what Kabbalah or Masorah means in the area of Jewish scholarship. We all say every Saturday afternoon, following the recital of the Mincha prayer, we say the famous, we pronounce the famous dictum, Moshe kibul Torah Mesinai Mesorah LeYeshua. Moshe received the Torah from the Almighty on the Mount Sinai, and he passed it on and handed it down to Yeshua, his disciple. Torah knowledge originated in Sinai and has been passed on from generation to generation, from scholar to scholar, from individual to individual, throughout the centuries and the millennia. If you will ask me what is the quintessence of Jewish history, I will tell you Jewish history revolves around one relationship, teacher and disciple. Rav and Talmid. Moses himself is not known to us as a liberator, as a redeemer, as king, as archpriest, but as our teacher. One generation teaches, another generation listens. What does one generation teach? A variety of things. Truths, verities, norms, laws. Moreover, it teaches a method of understanding the world, and a method or a lifestyle, how to live. In a word, there is a continuity of thought, concepts, and one generation is responsible, and as a teacher, another generation as a disciple. In a word, it is a scholastic rabbinic Masorah. Masorah of teacher and Rav et Talmid, or teacher and disciple. However, I believe, and I firmly believe in that, there is another Masorah of great significance and unlimited relevance. Namely, the Masorah, or the tradition, or the practical tradition, or the lifestyle of the Jewish layman. And let me not play around with the word layman, whose significance I don't understand so well, and substitute for layman the word balabos. A strange word, philologically strange, semantically strange, and the history of the word is unknown. It's a mystery. What does it mean, balabos? Balabos means one who holds a house. No, but as a type, as a representative of the people, what does it mean, balabais? I don't know, I can tell you. I'm not a philologist in general, in particular, even philologists don't know about it. But let me speak about it without knowing the origin of the word. Let us speak about the balabos as a person, a personality. In contrast with the scholastic, the practical tradition is not one of concepts, abstractions, thoughts, methods, laws, norms. The practical tradition is one of images, of something, a continuity of something which I see, I feel, and I can stretch out, reach out for it. It is a tradition of a lifestyle, of action. It's a personality tradition. This tradition goes back, can be traced back to antiquity. If you ask me who was the first Jewish balabos in history, in the Bible, yes, he was a prime minister. He did not make a living as a rabbi. He was a prime minister in Egypt. On the other hand, the leader of the base, Beth Jacob, of the house of Jacob, which came to Egypt because of the famine. It goes back to the so-called Yakirei Yerushalayim, the aristocrats of Jerusalem, before the destruction of the temple. The Talmud tells many stories about the people in Jerusalem, Yakirei Yerushalayim, the aristocrats, the noblemen of Jerusalem, who Yom Kippur night did not retire, did not go to bed, because the King Godel was alone in isolation. And they wanted to make the King Godel feel there are people who have compassion for him, who are ready to help him. So this is Yom Kippur was the great day of the King Godel. And there are people, and make him feel hopeful, and give him courage to carry on the avodah the following morning. Those are the Yakirei Yerushalayim. Yakirei Yerushalayim lehoi yishenim beYisraelayim. The aristocrat of Jerusalem did not go to bed. But he shishba King Godel avoro, in order that King Godel should hear the noise. And he would not fall asleep, he would not be bored and fall asleep. We tell stories, and the Jewish people, the people of people of which has ability of storytelling. It was developed and reached its climax in the Hasidic world. But storytelling is a part of is a unique talent of the Jew. In our stories, we tell stories not only about great rabbinic scholars, but also about outstanding ballet batim, particularly ballet stokers. We know, for instance, of the Gaon of Vilna, the greatest scholar of the 18th century. But we also know about a ballet boss in Vilna, whose name was Reber Reber. And we have very nice stories about him, about his lifestyle, his personality, his kindness. Reber Reber was a merchant and just a contemporary of the governor of the world. As a matter of fact, it is not easy. It was not easy to become a scholar. It's not easy to become a genius in Jewish balabos. It's very difficult. The balabos perhaps is exposed to more temptation than the scholar. And the balabos needs a lot of courage. I would say Rabbi Lalemo mentioned the word heroic effort. He has to make a heroic effort in order to retain the title of balabos, of balabos. And in my opinion, I'm inclined to believe that our miraculous survival throughout the ages and the millennia, our miraculous survival through the dark ages, our miraculous survival through the long, lonely night of Galut, is due not only to the rabbinic scholars, definitely due to them. They guided us. They told us what to do. And now TF. But it's also due to the Jewish Barabbas, to his discipline, his intelligence, and his readiness to sacrifice. Without the Barabbas, this unique type, I doubt whether we would have survived. Bayolen Shom Balailahu, and he slept and he stayed and he spent a lonely night. And the rabbi, the scholar, and the balabais are responsible. But we survived. You ask me, and then I can not only hear the question, I can see the question, I always. You will ask me, what did those Balabatim possess? We wrote many books about this, our scholars. So many books about Maimonides, about Nachmanides, about the Gaon of Vilna, about the Chaim Volozhin, about the Chaber, the Ramo. More or less, we are oriented as far as they are concerned. But very little was written about the Jewish Balabas. Very little. Historians are not interested about it. So if somebody should ask me, what did the Balabas possess that was characteristic of the important role that was responsible for the important role the Balabas played in Jewish history? What was unique about it? What was unique? I believe that the Balabas, the Yiddish Balabas, distinguished himself with three characteristic traits. He had, I would say, three capabilities. First trait of character is the Balabas had a sense of unlimited responsibility. At the highest level, he had a clear awareness, to use a Talmudic phrase, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zavodeh. He had a clear awareness of his responsibility, not only for himself or his family, but for the entire Jewish community. And not only for the Jewish community in his town, but for the entire Jewish community throughout the world. And it was not just a sense of responsibility. He discharged his duty. Second, the Jewish Balabas had a tough, pragmatic mind. Tough mind. The Balabatim thought strictly in utilitarian, practical categories and terms. They had also capability for decision making, and they had unlimited capability for decision implementing. Otherwise, if they hadn't had those capabilities, they would have not reached the top. They did. They did reach. They are prominent. And it will sound like nonsensical, absurd. We had not only a tough mind, but they had a sensitive heart. Can a person be both at the same time? Can a person be both at the same time? Or it is nonsensical to expect a person to be both. I don't know, psychologically, I don't know if it's possible or not. To be tough and to be a dreamer. To have a utilitarian mind, a pragmatic approach to the world, and be at the same time a visionary. Looking up to the stars. The Jewish Balabatim work did have that capability. They combined the thesis and the antithesis. And somehow, this thesis and antithesis found the synthesis in their personality, It was a dialectical personality. The Jewish Balabos represented two attitudes. Toughness was very hard to cheat him. Even our enemies knew about it. It's very hard to cheat a Jew, and it is true, and we don't have to defend ourselves. It is hard to cheat a Jew. Tough mind, very consistent. The Jew always analyzes, this is our method in Talmud. Our analysis is in depth. And at the same time, the Jew is a dreamer, a visionary. He lifts up his head to the stars, to the mountains. And in addition to the sensitivity of the heart and the dream which you can see in his eyes, the Jew and the Jewish Balabas had unshakable faith in redemption of the people and the salvation of the Jews. You will ask me, from whom did they inherit those Jewish Balabatim, these basic qualities, to be tough and to be a dreamer at the same time? As I told you before, they inherited it from the first Jewish Balabos. Characteristic about Joseph. How does the Bible portray Joseph? What kind of a person he was? Was a funny person. He used to dream of sheaves of corn. We are binding sheaves, Naomi Malumim, we are binding sheaves. Very prosaic dream. Very prosaic dream. A practical dream. And at the same time, he dreamt about stars. In the sky, about the I would say the endless distances of the uncharted lanes in the world, in the universe. Somehow he dreamt about stuff. And apparently, both dreams did not, even though mutually exclusive, but still found their synthesis in the personality of Jacob, after Joseph. Now let me tell you something which happened 14 years ago. Mrs. Soloveitchik, Zecheinah Livracha, I and Mrs. Soloveitchik and I, myself, met Mr. Gruz 14 or 15 years ago, I don't remember exactly the date, for the first time. I asked for an appointment, he gave me an appointment, but he came himself. I was ready to go to see him. But he came. He spent not a long time. But Mr. Gruz is not a bore. And Mr. Gruz is a businessman, to the point. It was a short time. I would say half an hour. And he walked out. After he departed, so Mrs. Soloveitchik said to me, for the first time I met in America a Jewish Balabas. He just walked into our house from the pages of Jewish history, from the Pantheon of the Balabatim, of Jewish history. The Balabatim, the Jewish history is a story of the Jewish Balabas. She was right. In her characterization of Mr. Gruz, whenever I meet him, I am indeed reminded, quite often, willingly, spontaneously, of the outstanding Balabatim in our history. The names of a Moses Montefiore comes to my mind when I see Mr. Gruz. The name of an Anshul Rothschild, the so-called that the Jews in the ghetto called in Eastern Europe the Frumer Rothschild. I'll tell you frankly, Mr. Drews gave more money to Jewish causes than Montefiore and Angel Russell taken together, combined together. It's not an exaggeration. But the amount is Mr. Drews distributes for charity and his intention, I mean, with regard to the future, is by far superior to all the philanthropy work which Montefiore or Angel Russell were engaged. Sometimes those names come up in my mind, and sometimes I pronounce them in undertone. Here comes Moshe Montefiore. I cannot restrain myself from pronouncing those names in undertone. And Mr. Drews indeed, and there's no flattery and no panegyric on my part, I mean, what I say is true. I mean, Mr. Drews reflects something of those Balabatim, of the Yosef of old. His name happens to be Yosef, Joseph. But he reflects something of Joseph of old, of antiquity. Me'almim, alumim, a businessman, I don't know what he sells, I don't know yet. Himself a good merchandise and very profitable. Mr. Drews reflects something of those Balabatim which he inherited from Yosef of old. First of all, there's a tremendous, I would say sometimes, a tremendous sense of responsibility, of concern. I have hardly met another person who is as concerned as Mr. Drews about whom? About the Jew, about the Jews. What will happen to us? What will happen to all of us? He's concerned. I mean, I believe it this concern takes up more time than his business transaction. He's concerned. I mean, whenever he comes to me, so he has a plan what to do, how to do. But he's concerned. By Yarad Hashem, he saw Liris, God says, so that Moses is concerned. Many people pass by the snare, the burning bush, didn't pay attention. They did not see the miracle, Madua Leivaha snare. Why wasn't the bush consumed by fire? It was no problem to them, the bush, and that's all. But Moses passed by, and Moses says, Vasura Novere, let me depart from the path, from my path, from the highway. Let me take a look. Madua Leivaha snare, why hasn't the snare been consumed by the fires of Goles and Chum and Holocaust in the last 25 or 50 years? And still, I mean, the snare is still in existence. It was not consumed by fire. This is the central question which Mr. Drews has on the, with Mr. Drews, I mean, is concerned. What can be done as Lady Barak? What can be done? What can be done? What can we do? What can everybody do? Each individual, lady, those snakes should have been consumed by fire, I mean, in 1935. We expect. I mean, a Jew should finally realize that there is no, I mean, we were afraid that a Jew will finally realize there is no sense, there is no meaning to our existence. We have been exterminated like insects. And still, I mean, the great miracle happened between 45 and 79. We have a new generation of Jews, committed Jews. The yeshivos are crowded with students. I mean, we have many observant Jews. We would like to have more. But it's a very impressive picture. It's madua li yivarasne. Why wasn't that consumed?
by fire. And Mr. Gruzzi wants to know exactly what should be done, what could be done, in order to guarantee the survival of this particular bush. There's no doubt about it, that he's a responsible person. And very, very concerned. He does care. Now, he certainly has a tough mind. To quarrel with him, I would not recommend. Tough. I don't know in business, but I believe he's tough in business. He's on the one hand a tough businessman, and apparently, I don't know, a great lamented businessman. I would say a genius in the area, the mercantile area. There's a great, I'm not an expert on that, so I cannot tell you whether he's a good merchant or not. But the results show that it is pretty good. He is Me'almi Malumin. He is a binder of sheaves. But the same Bruce with the tough mind, and with the mercantile approach to certain matters, pragmatic, utilitarian, is also a visionary. Very imaginative. I, as a rogue, I lack imagination. But he is very imaginative. His ideas are dreams. He beholds visions. The second dream of Joseph, Hashemesh v'yireach v'chadasot t'chovit, the sun and the moon, the 11 stars, bow to me, is also a dream of Mr. Yosef Bruce, not only of the old Joseph, but of Mr. Yosef Shaul Bruce, who lives on Fifth Avenue in New York. And all that, and his greatest dream is survival of our people. Whatever he did in Eretz Yisrael and the United States, whatever he did here, it expresses his dream, represents his dream, is the question, a question of a dreamer. What could be done, what could we do in order to survive? May the Almighty grant him and Mrs. Bruce there's a large share, a big share, in all the good which Mr. Bruce does. May the Almighty grant both of them many, many years of being tough and dreaming. And let the dream be fulfilled.